This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Scientists measure disappearing Arctic sea ice from space. Our next guest travels there to learn from the land and the local culture. We just have time for a brief interview with Hans-Jørgen Wallenwehe. He's a professor at Lillehammer University College in Norway. What northern lands have you visited?
I have been traveling circumpolar. I've been in Siberia and the northern part of the Nordic countries, and in Greenland and in the northern part of Canada.
And why did you go there?
Well, partly I went there because I was interested in the changes which are happening in the high Arctic, going from a hunting economy into a modern economy, and partly because of the environmental change in the high Arctic.
Well, many of us here think of a land of snow and ice as forbidding, maybe as a death place for famous explorers like Franklin. But for the people who live there, snow and ice are like a language, and you've done a study of Aboriginal languages from the Canadian North, Greenland, and Scandinavia. What sorts of things did you find in the languages of frozen lands?
In a way, I mean, the language connected to the landscape tells a lot about the culture of the high Arctic people and how they use the ice and snow environment. It's used for hunting, for reindeer herding, and of course also for navigating.
And this language of what has always been known, as the Inuit say, how could that help us to understand how the polar climate is changing?
The language is very connected to the situation of the past, and it's reading the changes in the environment and the changes in cracks in the ice and the changes in snow structure and so on tells a lot about this climate change. And of course, it also tells a lot about the high, long transported pollution from the south.
Is the color of the snow changing, for example?
Sometimes it is changing. And sometimes there are very, very drastic changes in the high Arctic due to pollution from the far south.
All right. And do you think that modern scientists are drawing on this Inuit knowledge to understand the things like changes to sea ice?
In many ways, I feel like the traditional language and the traditional knowledge of the local people have to a great extent been ignored. We are mostly reading changes through the use of high technology and through different kind of analyses done by satellites and, of course, also by field work. But we are not, to a great extent, listening to the local people and their knowledge of the past.
If a common language is established in one region, say in Greenland, would that undermine the survival skills that are hidden within each dialect?
I think so. I think language is mostly very, very local. It's connected to the very local environment. And it gives a lot of insights into the local environment. And when we lose that language, we lose part of the connection to the landscape, in my opinion.
And it seems to me, Hans, that globalization is sweeping away local cultures even faster than the imperial empires before it. What do you think happens when Netflix and Disney and Facebook connect up people in the far north?
Well, I think in a way that the use of modern technology can be combined with traditional local knowledge. But very often that does not happen. People tend to forget the local knowledge and ignore it, living more modern life. But those people who really succeed in the high Arctic, they, quite a lot of them, have quite some, they also use the local language and the local knowledge, and that is also connected to their foundational values.
Do you think young Greenlanders are tuned into climate change? Would they take part in activities trying to save the polar ice, or might they welcome a warmer climate?
I think many of them will connect to everything that can preserve their environment. But of course, you have the others also as well.
And what do you think about the situation of Aboriginal people, say, in Norway or Sweden, compared to Canada?
Well, I think in the Rio of Nunavut in northern Canada, the independent Inuit territory, I think it's a very, very strong sense of identity connected to the environment. And I also do think that the same thing is true in the Sami areas in northern Norway and the traditional Norse areas in the northern Norway and Siberia. However, I mean, new groups of population are moving into those areas to a great extent. And often the traditional population is a small minority.
Yes, and I expect to see even more of that as the possibilities of oil and gas developing in the Arctic come along.
I do so too. But still, I think also even oil and gas companies, they will need that kind of knowledge in order to understand the environment and the environmental changes in the high Arctic.
You know, Hans, we've had scientists on this program worrying about thawing permafrost. How is that actually experienced in northern lands?
Well, the change in permafrost is very, very serious. Of course, for all structures built on the permafrost, the ground is not as stable as before. You get more mudslides and so on. So you get it hot and the landscape is deteriorating in different ways. Rivers are digging away and so on.
Are there other signs of climate change in the far north that you could tell us about?
Well, I mean, it's also about the ice itself. The ice is generally thinner than before. It's more difficult to travel on the ice. The ice is currents are making areas where you formerly could travel very safely, very unsafe to travel on. You see the changes in the vegetation, you see the changes in the animal population, you see it everywhere.
Now, as you know, Shell Oil has received most of the permission it needs to drill in the Arctic off Alaska, and we know Greenpeace protested a drilling rig off Greenland. Do you think Aboriginal governments will welcome this new oil revenue, or do they realize it will further destabilize the polar climate?
I'm afraid some Aboriginal will also welcome the oil exploration because of the income. But I think many people will object to the oil drilling because it might deteriorate the environment.
All sorts of countries claim an interest in the Arctic. Denmark is competing with Canada. Russia wants to claim a huge area. Even China wants a seat on the Arctic Council. What do you think of this modern rush to own the Arctic?
The modern rush to own the Arctic means that there are serious economical interests in the sea bottom, or underneath the sea bottom, actually. It's for fishing, it's for oil exploration, it's for a different kind of mining on the bottom of the sea floor, and so on. It tells a lot about the future conflict and the future potential environmental challenges we are facing.
Are you concerned about increasing release in the Arctic of the dangerous greenhouse gas methane?
Absolutely. We are all very, very scared about that.
And what do you think about proposals to geoengineer to slow down the melting of glaciers and sea ice, for example, spraying sulfur particles in the Arctic air?
Personally, I feel like all kind of chemical or human interference in processes like that, except by stopping our own release of into the atmosphere, is something that can have negative impacts as well.
In your opinion, Hans, should the culture of what has always been known be protected, and can it be protected?
It should at least be acknowledged, and we should... We should give priority, we should be able to listen to people who have lived in the Arctic, and we should try to use their knowledge as part of our attempts to protect the environment. And that's not only for the Arctic, it's also about Pacific cultures, it's also about all kinds of rural culture and the knowledge. It's very, very important wherever it is.
And as we finish up, are there any stories you would like to tell us about your travels in northern lands?
Mostly, I would like to tell that people want to be respected by being listened to. And I rarely see people who are living traditionally who have any serious social problems. I mean, those social problems is something that comes with the culture conflicts that we have. They might be very poor. They need modern health services. and an either-cultural kind of economy. But as long as they gain respect, the high Arctic cultures are generally very well-functioning cultures.
We've been talking with Hans-Jørgen Wallenwehe, a professor at Lillehammer University College in Norway. He's written about Greenland and about the language and culture of peoples around the Arctic Circle and what that can tell us about climate change. Hans, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're most welcome.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock. That's it for Radio EcoShock. Join us next week as the world turns. I'm Alex Smith, saying thank you for listening.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.